to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to contact us or send in a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, pardon me, a live show, excuse me. The last five shows are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. And also I'm going to take a sip of water so that I don't cough in your ear again. Excuse me. Better. Thank you. Okay, this time we're going to be talking about setting goals. And of course, we need to set a goal so that we know what our outcome is going to be. And like we often do, let's start the show by defining what we mean about setting a goal in the context of a negotiation, a seminar, a workshop, a group participation, whatever it is that we're doing, an alternative dispute resolution, something that we're a mediator at. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to set a goal so that we all know what we're doing? And I see we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. And we have lots of wonderful definitions. Yes. pardon me. Kyle says that setting a goal is an aspiration for the future. Uh-huh. An aspiration for the future. What we'd like to accomplish is a lot of people are saying, Barbara and others are saying, well, it's what you want to accomplish, what you've decided to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And quite a few people are talking about rather a democratic process. Mark and others say that it's what the majority determines needs to be done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, this is a very good point that a lot of people are making. We're talking about a goal in rather a general manner, like an aspiration for the future. But one of the main things we need to do when we set a goal is to make it specific enough so that we can accomplish it within a reasonable, realistic time frame. Yeah, because the future is big. You know, it's who knows how long the future is. But we need to accomplish something within a reasonable time frame and start the process to get there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's really the main part. It is an aspiration for the future and something you want to accomplish. But when you really set a goal, you're saying, you know, this is now. This is the time we're going to do it. And not, it's more than a wish, more than an idea for the future. It's a let's get this done now type. And that's really what we're talking about when we set a goal and we start the process with the group and we want to get it done within a realistic time period. Mm-hmm. Which also means that the goal must be realistic too, right? Yeah. So let's talk about that. How do we actually set the goal? You know, people say, well, let's set a goal. But what do we do? What do we want to accomplish? How do we decide what the goal is going to be that we're going to now work towards? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Lindsay and others are making a good point that in the context of what we're speaking of, and that's not personal goals and things like that, but really a group goal, she says by deciding on the desired change. And that's probably the first step, isn't it? We're getting a lot of agreement that the first step, and thank you for all of your participation, the first step is to decide what you want, right? Decide what needs to be changed, because usually a goal is something that we want to be changed in the future, right? It's something we want to accomplish. And if everything was perfect, we wouldn't be, well, we might be working towards being perfect, too, on a personal level, but as a group and during the kind of a process that we're talking about, a negotiated one, it's something that you want to change. You have to decide what you'd like to change. And the next step, as people are pointing out, and thank you for all of your participation, is that after you decide that, you have to make it more specific. Are we going to try to change now? What's our first step? And how are we going to do that? What are we going to do? That's how we have to set a goal that is, as we talked about, realistic and capable of being done. You know, Patrick and others are saying that you set your goal by creating a mission statement. And we've talked about mission statements in the past. And yes, I'm going to say the famous sentence that you guys all say I say, which is true. And I'm going to say it depends. Because a mission statement can just be an agreement that this is our goal and it's what we're going to work towards. Because the goal might be somewhat obvious because we've all gotten together for a specific purpose. Or it might be more complicated and we need to decide on the first step towards accomplishing our goal because it's complex. And we are not, some groups are all in agreement, right? And we're not usually the heads of those. Because there's negotiation in the sense of how fast can we go, but groups that are all in agreement don't usually need a third-party impartial leader. Or maybe we are leading. It's a good point that a lot of times we are not really we haven't been called in as the leader. We've just naturally become the leader because we're more organized or whatever. But we are in agreement with the rest of the members of the group too. And those kind of groups, they have a mission statement, in a sense, stand their mission because they are all focused on the exact same goal and for basically the exact same purpose. But some groups want the same goal, but they have a different reason, right? Yeah. And they might need a mission statement, and it might even be written down. And the reason that I say might, and yes, I'm getting a lot of agreement with this, and people are going, yeah, we know this, but, you know, there's new people too. One of the reasons that you might want to write it down, but if it's going to take a lot of haggling on the wording, and it's going to take a whole bunch of meetings and take a lot of time in the process, you might want to agree on a more generic mission statement so that you can narrow down the goal better. That is an it depends. It depends on the group. And it depends on whether or not it's worthy of your time and effort to really decide on a written mission statement. Good point. Sometimes we're looking for a lot of people are saying, Cynthia and others are saying, sometimes you're looking for outside funding and you need to have a mission statement. That's a real reason to write one down. So creating a mission statement, even if it's not necessarily written down, is an important process step for setting your goal. Because then you know that you've all got the same goal and you're all working towards it. Even though your reasons might be somewhat different. You know, this is a good point. The question is, how do we set the goal? And Jen says out of necessity. Sometimes you really need to get something changed. Oftentimes it is a new law or regulation, for example, that has impacted this group, this type of person, this type of employment, whatever kind of a group it is, but it has impacted this group adversely. And they need to have a goal to change something out of necessity. They might have inadvertently been, nobody thought about them. But now, they've got some sort of a regulation that's very hard to accommodate. It's going to go out of business. Yeah. So out of necessity, for example. Good point. People are saying that it's not necessarily economic necessity. It could be the necessity to find a cure for something, a necessity because of illness. But a real necessity that the people in the group share. Necessity to feed people, exactly. Some sort of a necessity to help or to prevent. So, as a practical matter, because we're a practical show, right, and we don't just talk in theory, we talk about what really needs to be done as a practical matter. So as a practical matter, how do we make these types of decisions? How do we set our goal? How do we decide what it is that we're going to do? As a practical matter, what's our next step? Not just, well, yeah, we'd like it to be, and we can talk until we've all talked ourselves out, but that's not going to change whatever needs to be changed. We need to have a practical part to this. So as a practical matter, how do we make these decisions? How do we find that? How do we set our goal? Sean and others are saying by majority vote. I like to take a survey. I like to take a vote to see how many people are in agreement and if we're all headed in the same direction. We all think it's correct. And, you know, you don't have to do it just one time, of course. You can do it kind of regularly. You know, people are asking, and this is a very good question, whether or not the vote, the survey, the raising of hands, so to speak, should be open so that everybody can see it, or should be anonymous. You do it by email, and only the leader knows who it was that responded. Well, all right, and also by, if you're going to do it in the room, because you need to do it right now, people can put it on a little piece of paper and put it in a box, and then the leader takes the tally. The answer is, I'm going to say it depends again, but it depends on the dynamic of the group. And you will know this as a leader, whether or not people want to own their vote, or you've got people who are part of a group within the group, kind of, let's call them a side, and they've changed their mind, but they don't want to go against someone else that is influential to them. And then you would need to have an anonymous vote. And quite frankly, an anonymous vote, I like, if they're going to do the in the hat, which is the easiest to do, I kind of like someone to help me count so that no one thinks that, well, I took a side and I didn't count properly. Unless I'm certain that people are pretty much acquiescing and that nobody will feel that they can't vote because they don't want anybody to know, I am indeed in favor of the vote on a scrap of paper, throw it in the box, let's all take a time out, a break. Let's have something, you know, we have snack in the room, we have something to do. During the break, I count the votes, unless there's so few people that we can just do it instantaneously. I just spread them out and go, well, we've got everybody's acquiesced, or the majority says this. It depends how many people, how far you have to vote, how much you have to count. So as a practical matter, yes, majority is very important because it means that you're all going to work towards it, going to work towards the goal that you've now set. Bobby says, by discussing and negotiating the mission statement, because the mission statement needs to be practical. Yeah, that's a good point. You can't have a mission statement that's so general about, helping the world type mission statement. It needs to set a goal. You need to know what you're doing. by discussing and negotiating the mission statement, because it needs to be practical, and that will indeed will set your goal. You'll understand where you're going. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, NEPA and others are making a very good point that one of the things that you need as a practical matter to make a decision of what your goal is that you need to understand the economic reality. The economic reality, what it is that we can really do given our funds. Mm-hmm. And do we need to raise more? Economic reality is often the practical turning point. That's how we know whether or not we're going to make our goal. Mm-hmm. The economic reality, very important, very good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a very good point, too. We talk about research a lot on this show because we don't want to, you know how the old expression, you don't want to reinvent the wheel? If somebody's already done it, well, let's see how they did it so that we can get an understanding, perhaps, of how we should do it. Very good point. Eden says that you make your practical decisions by research into what others have done. Yeah. Let's think about somebody else that's had the same basic problem, or maybe the same specific one. You know, sometimes different areas of the world get the same problem. And by research into what others have done, and, of course, the corollary to that, and Cheryl makes a good point, by research into what failed. Mm-hmm. That's what other people have done, but we usually think of it as success, right? They did this, and we should do it too. But quite frankly, oftentimes, the most interesting research is what failed. The reason being that we don't want to repeat it. Yeah, that didn't work, and we were talking about it. Well, is it the same issue? And we had the same circumstances? Let's think about what happened to them. And, oh my, that really didn't work, if you know what I mean. Research into what failed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, the question is being asked, and of course this is an organic show. We go wherever the questions ask. What type of goals should we set? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good to talk about setting goals, but what type of goals? Let's talk about what it is that we're doing on a practical matter. What kind of goals should we set? Mm-hmm. Ooh, we've got some consensus here. Thank you for all of your participation. Yes, and if you'd like to see prior shows, we've got a couple of people asking this. The prior shows are archived, the last five archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows archived on the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. So what type of goals should we set? Mm-hmm. That's the question. And this is very interesting because we've got quite a few people with the same idea, and it's very practical. I'm so proud. It's kind of like, yes, we're a practical show, and this is a practical answer. A lot of people are talking about what I'm going to call monetary goals. For example, quite a few people, Warren and others, are talking about setting a budget, mm-hmm, so that we know how much we can spend, the priority, what we need to spend it on. Pardon me. And Grace and others are talking about estimates. If you're going to need to do something and have an outside contract or have somebody or get some sort of an expert that costs money or whatever it is that you're doing that needs to cost money and needs to go outside, you need to get an estimate for it because how are you going to know about what you should budget for? Mm-hmm. And also, I like to get more than one so that we have an idea of how much it should cost. Yeah, estimates for expenses. Quite a few people are talking about fundraising, and that's, of course, a very big monetary goal. We have to look at what we need to do, and we might need to raise funds for it. Fundraising is a very important part of this. Uh-huh, yeah. And, good point, Now, I happen to be in the United States, and this is a very global show. But in the United States, and I think that in other places too, of course, that if you're going to have fundraising, you might have to think about forming an entity, a legal entity, like a nonprofit or a corporation or something, if you're going to take in funds that involves outside money, if it's going to be real money and not just pass the hat amongst the people in the group. But if you're going to actually solicit funds, you're going to have to pay taxes, right? And you're going to have to form an entity. That means that you might have to budget an expense for an attorney. So this is all monetary considerations. Mm-hmm. Good point. Chara and others are talking about grant seeking. That's outside funds that somebody gives you as a grant. Important, too. Mm-hmm. And then we've got monetary considerations that I'm going to call payment for services. They probably go into the budget, and they probably will have an estimate for expenses, as Grace and others are saying, and you probably might need to fundraise for them, or they might come out of a grant. But these are payment for services. We've got a lot of people talking about paying for research. Not all research, of course, is free, and you might need an expert or someone who is experienced in the field to do some research for you. Mm-hmm. And then there's marketing expenses. I'm going to put that under payment for services. Mm-hmm. Marketing, and there's social media, right? Mm-hmm. And people are talking about marketing in the sense of a demographic and what I would call a consumer group, kind of a consumer survey type group, a target group, yeah. So that those are all payments for services. You know, if you have a target group, you pay them a kind of a small stipend, but all of these things are monetary considerations. Well, we want to set this goal, but we're going to need some funds. We're going to need, and as a practical matter, we're going to need some capital in order to accomplish this goal. Mm-hmm. And we're getting a lot of agreement on that. And we're getting also, the question was, what type of goals should we set? Monetary is a real good one. And a timeline for getting the money in hand is also being mentioned, which of course is very important. You want to be able to act within a reasonable time, right? And you don't want the process to go forever. You want to get done with it. Well, people are saying that if it's a social goal, like, all right, it's a good point. I suppose I should say it depends, because some processes do take a really long time. But you want to have a goal in sight, even if it takes years. For example, I happen to be a Rotarian. And Rotary, which is an international organization that is to benefit the world, really, is a volunteer organization. We all make monetary donations. They ask for fundraising. There's a foundation. They ask for extra monetary donations. And Rotary set a goal of eradicating polio in the world, not just in one country. But, you know, because there is a vaccine and like that, but the goal was set that now that we can do something about polio, which is a terribly debilitating disease, we will come and give the vaccine to everyone so that there's no more spreading of polio. Well, that's a goal that is specific, but it can't have a specific timeline. If the timeline is as fast as we can do it. But we set a goal of how to do it because actual emissaries, actual groups of people go out all over the world to fairly remote-ish locations. All right, they're places that don't have a lot of infrastructure. And they go and they literally put the polio vaccine into babies' mouths to drop. Well, that's setting a goal, that's working towards a goal, And it's taken quite a long time to accomplish the goal because the timeline was until everybody is unable to be a carrier of the polio virus. And there are setbacks and there are go-forwards and like that. But we've almost got it, which is magnificent, and a lot of people worked on it and actually literally took their time and their effort and their money and their fingers, their hand. They actually went and helped do it in whole teams that went all over the world. And we've almost got it. Yeah. So it's almost eradicated in the whole world. But it took a long time. It took years. But see, the process didn't falter because there was milestones along the way which kept people encouraged. And as you got further into the process, even though it was taking years, you could see that progress was being made. And I think that's one of the most important parts of setting a goal, is that you need to have progress along the way so that people don't get discouraged and say, oh, my God, that's impossible. Because it was a huge task, and it seemed like, oh, my God, that might be impossible. But we're almost there. There are very few cases of polio in the world today, and it used to be a scourge all over the world. I mean, it was just, you know, summertime hit, people got polio. It was just everywhere. And it's terrible. And so, but as we went along, countries got cured of polio. Areas no longer had polio cases. And that's how you knew. You had reporting, right? And the hospitals actually reported whether or not they saw any cases of polio. Doctors reported in. And so that's how you knew, wow, there's no cases of polio in this area anymore because the vaccine has been given, really, to everybody so that it hasn't been spread. Yeah. So it's an amazing thing. And yes, it was, people are going, wow, that's some goal. And yes, it is true that nowadays the Gates Foundation has put in some money because it's towards the end of the fight for eradicating polio. And I'm not denigrating them. That's a magnificent thing. But Rotarians actually started it, and we went all over the world personally and really, really worked it practically on a shoestring, considering the magnitude of the goal. Yeah, and we were all volunteers, and we all went. And so, yeah, that's a goal. And yeah. I didn't mean to make a plug for Rotary, but it's a good example of setting a specific goal and working towards it and seeing it as a step-by-step process of curing an area. And then sometimes there was a setback and there was a few more cases and then we had to go back. It was a process and it took a long time, but the goal was so well-defined and so necessary that you could keep working towards it and know that you were getting somewhere. People are asking what you're going to cure after polio. Actually, there is an answer to that because we never give up. And it's a very large organization with a whole bunch of volunteers all over the world. It's not at all just Americans. It's all kinds of people all over the world. Rotary is the biggest social help. The motto is service above self. And it's got membership organizations everywhere. And the quick answer to the question of what is Rotary going to do after polio is cured, is eradicated, because it's not really cured, it's eradicated. The next thing that we're going to work on is malaria. So that's really true. Let's get back to what type of goals should we set now that we've decided that you can set a lofty goal as long as it is specific and people understand that progress is being made. Mm-hmm. And, of course, funding, monetary, was a consideration, right, in that, because we had expenses, and there was fundraising and grant giving and estimates, and there's a big budget, and there was a lot of, which is the next item that people are talking about and what types of goals should we set, there was a lot of procedural considerations in a thing like that. And even though we're probably not actually leading something that big, there's still procedural considerations whenever you're trying to go for a goal and you've got a group, right? Yeah. For example, Makiko and others are saying that you need always to create a timeline that's step by step so that you can see, A, that you're making progress. Otherwise, it's discouraging, and people forget how little you had and how much more you've got, how much further you've gotten, because you forget where you came from. You know, you forget where you started. So a timeline is a really good thing. I actually like a visual representation of a timeline so that you can say, well, we started here and we had a goal, but it was pretty far away and we didn't have any funding or anything. And now we're up to here. And that's pretty good. That's a goal that we can move forward towards. We're getting closer. Timelines, in that respect, a timeline's wonderful. I like a physical representation. I do. Or it doesn't have to literally be a line with little pigs on it, but I like to be able to remember how far we've come. You could do it in kind of a list form. Mm-hmm. Timelines are indeed step by step. People are saying, well, it's good to understand the next step when you have a timeline. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Britton and others are talking about delegation of duties. That's very procedural, very important. We are a group. We have participants, and participants need to do something to further the goals of the group, right? We need to go forward, and we need to know who is doing what so that we can be efficient with our time. Yeah, and that's delegation of duties. It might be done by the leader. I personally like people to volunteer because I don't know what they think they can do and what they are capable of, really. And if I just assign something, then it's onerous. It's hard. It's, really? And I don't have time for that. But if someone volunteers and they make commitment and they nod their head and they think, you know, I can handle that. And I'll get together with this other participant and we'll do it together and we'll get it done. You've got a much better group dynamic that way. Mm-hmm. So delegation of duties. It might be research. It might be calling someone. It might be using your contacts, right? Let's see who knows somebody who can help us with this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people Gianna and others are talking about project managers. It depends on the size. It depends on the complexity of the goal of the project. Mm-hmm. You might need a project manager. It might be the leader who does the delegation of duties and doesn't necessarily delegate but kind of keeps track of the results and sends around the emails and like that. I guess it's because I'm so busy is what it really is. I'm very fond of having somebody volunteer to kind of take charge of keeping track. Is that the project manager? Yeah. You see, you say project manager to me, and quite a few people are asking this, and it's a very good question. If you say project manager to me, I picture someone who is being paid, not a volunteer. And if the project is big enough or ongoing enough, the rotary polio is a good example and kind of a bad example because each Rotary, they call it clubs, but each Rotary group kind of manage their own part in the eradication, but they reported to a central location where the paid project manager kept track so that the group from England, a group from England and a group from America did not both go into the same area that had already been done. See, that's redundant. You wanted to go into some place that still had not been vaccinated and still had polio in its possibilities. Mm-hmm. So they have an international office with a project manager who kept track, actually kept maps and things and kept track, so that you didn't accidentally replicate something that didn't need to be replicated and needed to be in the area 200 miles that way. You know what I mean? I think when you say project manager to me, I think of someone who is paid. But it is at least someone who keeps track of what people are doing. People are saying and also makes them do it. I like to think of it as a gentle reminder. Mm-hmm. That this needs to be done, this needs to be reported on, we need you to finish so that we can go forward and we can report to the group as a whole. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you do need somebody who does that. I like to ask someone to volunteer if we have the funding. I will indeed hire someone. I think it's very important. A lot of times, all right, you get the project manager who is a really keeps track and is paid is usually not a group member. Right? They're kind of an outside person who you, the leader, has confidence in that they can keep track, that they will really do it. I personally, if we have any funds at all, which we oftentimes do because usually I'm being paid, no. I actually like to bring in a project manager because they're not friends with anybody in the group and they won't let things slide. Does that make sense? Yeah, I'm getting a lot of agreement on that. It's good to have an overseer. If it's a big enough goal and it's warranted, and usually my groups are there big enough so that we do that, but usually it's a professional that comes in and really delegates the tasks, really keeps track of who's doing what, prevents duplication, and causes us to go forward into the next step because we've reached a consensus and conclusion on the first step. Does that make sense? This is not the first step, but the step before. A good project manager, and of course you will get, as leader, you'll have favorites of who you were going to hire because you'll have done it before and you'll go, oh, this person's really good at that. A good project manager is sufficiently diplomatic so as to not irritate the group participants, because often they're volunteers and time is your most precious commodity. And they're donating their time and their effort, and you don't want them to say, you know, I'm not being paid to do this. You know, so someone has to be diplomatic, but has to get people to really, really do what their task is within a reasonable time frame so that we can all move forward. Yeah. It's an art. Project manager is an art. And if possible, I think it really do recommend that it should be a paid outside third party. Mm-hmm. Because everyone respects that they're the manager of it, and that's what you need to do. Yeah. Okay. If it's possible. If not, you can have somebody volunteer. A lot of people are saying that they are the project manager as leader. If you have time, if you can, and if the project doesn't become too complicated to do that. Mm-hmm. Because, and as leader, you are already causing the group to go and to progress forward. You're already delegating some tasks, but you've got a lot of jobs. And making certain that people perform as they should outside and bring the research, the calls, the contact, whatever it is, towards the group may be one task too many. You'll have to decide that. I'm going to say it depends again. It depends on the diversity of the group, the size of the group, the funding of the group, and like that. If you have absolutely no, it's a good point too. The point is being made that if you don't have any actual money, you can, and the project is just a matter of acquiring the various pieces and putting them together and sending it out to the participants, you might be able to get a college intern to do that, depending on what type of group you are. But if they could get credit, and you knew someone who was efficient and would and could really handle it. Yeah, it's not a, it's not really, project manager oftentimes is not a hard task because people are devoted and they really don't need to be nagged. It's a matter of gathering the information and disseminating it. And that is indeed a reasonable job for an intern. And interns, of course, get paid in credit and in thank yous and in resume enhancement, but not in actual money, usually. Or at least not very much money, yeah. Some people are saying, well, you could pay them a little bit. Yeah, but it, they're not – a professional project manager is oftentimes a little – wee bit expensive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Okay, so what else – what other goals should we set? You know, a lot of people are saying that the ultimate thing to know how to set for a goal is the outcome. Abby says we need to say specifically what we want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are saying the main goal that you want to set is an agreement as to what you want to do. An agreement of when we get all done, what will be changed? What will we have accomplished? Yeah. A lot of people are commenting, excuse me, I'm going to take a little sip of water. A lot of people are commenting that, and this is true, that you can set a goal that you want to accomplish when you start out. You've got to, because how are you going to know what it is that you're working towards, what you're doing? But that a lot of times as the process goes forward, the specific goal is modified. We might have set it too generally. And we didn't realize it at the time. It seemed like a specific goal. But when we got into it, we got into the process, what we really want to do is change a step towards the goal. We want to change a piece of what we said we wanted to do. Because, well, it might be more workable, too. Because you have to be practical. Michael says you need to revisit the mission statement to make it more specific. A lot of people are using the word practical. And this is true. And also, you know, Nicole and others are saying that when you get into the process, that what your general goal is becomes more specific, oftentimes because of necessity. A lot of people are saying that the goal changes because of the budgetary considerations that we just talked about, the monetary considerations. You might have a goal that is important, but your group can only work with on a piece of it because you just don't have the budget for it. And it also has to fit in with the timeline, right? Yeah, people are saying it needs to fit the timeline. If you can only, sometimes it's a group decision that we are working towards the goal, but this is the piece that we're going to play. Mm-hmm. And so that leads us into our next way to set the goal. And that's really what I'm going to call, and this is, of course, an organic show, and a lot of people are sending in wonderful examples and ideas. And I'm going to call these ideas building for the future. There's a goal that is important. We all agree on that. And that we need to accomplish it. Our group is going to help accomplish the goal within our budget and our timeline. We're going to tackle, we're going to try for a specific piece. We're going to reach it successfully. We're going to tackle an area of the goal. And then we're going to build for the future because we can't do it all alone. The goal is really too big. So we're going to reach out and create alliances. Yeah. It, you know, we sometimes we think of our negotiations, our groups, our alternative dispute resolutions, our seminars, our workshops as being insular, as being just something that we do and it is within that room, within that group. But the main thing that we do in order to achieve and accomplish a successful outcome is to build for the future and reach out and create alliances. And that is the ultimate way of dealing with a group and participants and a negotiation, is to say, look, we've all got the same goal. We might have different reasons for wanting it, but the outcome will look the same on our success chart. When it comes down to it, this is what we want. So let's create an alliance. Let's talk to each other. Let's be like Rotary and not duplicate our good work. Know what everybody's doing so that we can go forward. And oftentimes that will indeed have some sort of a project manager to keep everyone working simultaneously and not in a circle, working towards a goal. So what do we do when we build this for the future? And a lot of people are saying, Carol and others, that in order to reach out, and that's what we teach at Recipe for Peace Now, right? And we've had many shows that talk about this, that you need to reach out and you need to have some understanding and tolerance for cross-cultural, and we're not just talking about ethnicity or religion, but also maybe even business cultures, right? For cross-cultural connections. Our group understands each other. We're very similar to each other oftentimes. Yeah. But we need to reach out to a group that is dissimilar to us in the reasons that they want something, dissimilar to us in some cross-cultural way. But we need to work together. And, of course, we have talked about this in other shows, yes. And the last five archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com, and all of the shows archived at the radio station, blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. But this is permeates everything we do, right? We need to reach out and see, A, in our research, who else is doing this? Who else wants this change? Who else has the same goal as we do? And let's talk. Let's think about it. Now, yeah, a good point is being made, and yes, I do quite a few of these seminars and workshops. Sometimes when you're teaching something, in fact, usually, the goal is to impart knowledge to these people in this group, because you're the teacher, really. You're the leader, but you're really the teacher. And we are imparting knowledge. That's a workshop, a seminar, a speech, whatever it is. But when you've got a negotiation and you're trying to make an outside change, not an inside change as in all employees need to know this, but an outside change, there is something that is impacting us all. We'll take, for example, a regulation or a law that needs to be changed. Then there are other groups probably working on it too. And they might be more similar than you think to you, but even so, you need to reach out. And yes, Alan and others are making a very good point that a very good way to reach out is not necessarily, pardon me, in person, because they might be all over the world. A lot of projects that we take on are international, you know. Hey, Recipe for Peace Now is an international mediation project. You've got boots on the ground everywhere. But social media is wonderful for that. Yeah, you can reach out through social media. Right. And then can we include Skype into social media? Because we usually think about it as actually talking up and back online. But Skype, for example, could have a meeting. Yeah, absolutely. Jade says that it's a matter of having a contact list. Yes, and oftentimes that's one of the first things we talk about in a group when we're trying to effectuate a change, for example. Who knows someone who can help us? That's one of the calls. That's one of the duties. If you know someone who can help us, who can guide us, who can, well, assist the goal so that we can have a successful outcome, please call them, contact them, their contact list, right. And, yeah, Hashida and others are saying not only social media, but also regular media. And believe me, it's not dead. it really isn't. Regular media being what you think of traditionally, newspapers, television, radio, you know, is what we're doing now regular media? Well, kind of, right? It's a radio show, but it's on the internet so that everybody can listen wherever they are and get it for free and communicate, right? So we're kind of a crossbreed between regular media, because we're not a radio station, as in broadcast from a tower, I think radio stations come from, but we are a radio show on an internet station. So it's a crossbreed. So social media and regular media are melding to a certain extent. And how many people, of course, read a newspaper or a magazine online and not actually physically turn pages on a piece of paper? Yeah, probably majority of us, right? You read it online wherever you are. You read it on your device. Yeah. And then you subscribe to, like, email alerts from regular media. Most of us have that kind of a thing, what goes on our phone. Yeah, I get a daily email from a regular media source that exists in the real world in a piece of paper, but it's free to me on my phone. And if I want to dig deeper into the content, then I give them a small amount of money and do so. I could subscribe. Yeah. So regular media and social media have kind of blended in its way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, of course, there's definite social media also. Uh-huh. Linda and others are saying the trick is to connect with groups with similar goals. That is the trick. And the way that you find them, yes, a lot of times they find you. That's a good point, too. Because, you know, you're all doing research. You're all thinking about the outcome, all thinking about the goal, and they're researching you. They're researching us. They find us as a group with a similar goal, just like we find them as a group with a similar goal. Right. We get reached out to all the time as Recipe for Peace Now, to people asking questions, seeking advice, and seeking to make a connection with us to work towards a specific goal. Yeah. So that's really connecting with similar groups. We reach out, but they reach out to us too, right? Yeah. And, of course, we're going to get to the network within your own group. Saeed and others are pointing out that one of the best ways to reach out and create alliances is to get to know the other people in your group better so that you understand who you know in common, what you know in common, and how you're going to bridge the gap so that you can work successfully with each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is, of course, what Recipe for Peace Now is all about. And that is why, oops, we are new. It's like we're getting to the recipes. No, we're not, because we had such a wonderful discussion. We are nearly out of time. So, but that's really what Recipe for Peace Now does. It teaches, preaches, if you will, if you pardon. And we say, well, you know, with any kind of a negotiation, there is a point at which you need to kind of have a timeout. Now, the timeout might be even for, we talked about taking an anonymous vote so that we can have a majority decision. Might be that kind of a timeout, right? Might be just as simple as that. Need a minute to regroup. Or we might need a timeout because, well, we are starting to kind of argue with each other too vehemently. And we might have a breach of the civility rules, which would be a bad thing. Mm-hmm. Or we might just be tired. we've been talking for a long time, and attention is wavering, and we all need to stretch. I'm not big on the stand up and stretch thing. This is not third grade. If we stand up and stretch, we're going to walk over and have a snack. It's what it really is. And you know, my picture is on this show, and you can see that I do that quite a bit because I'm not thin. But it's a way to have the food and to have – the food is a tool, really. It might be because we're hungry. I mean, it might be dinner. But really, it's a tool, an idea to keep people in the room and talking to each other outside the confines of the formal negotiation. We all get up and we all go over and we all have something nice to eat and something to drink. It keeps us in the room. It gives us something to talk about that we're not going to outside the realm of the issues. And we're not going to argue about them in any way. It's like, well, this is delicious. Isn't that pretty? How did you make it? You see, it gives us something to talk about, and it gives us an ability to reach out to each other as humans, as people, and find some common ground. Wow, what a good idea to find some common ground. And to find out, you know, I know this person. That's finding out context, right? And to find, it also enables the leader, us, to go around and talk to the various members of the group and see, engage the atmosphere, gauge their opinions. And that's a very important thing, too, because it allows you to test the group dynamic, to test what people really feel, what they're really thinking. Mm-hmm. And maybe it'll give us a moment to think about the goal and an out-of-the-box way to get further towards it. Yeah, as a group, as a cooperative entity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's why we advocate having the food in the room. Keeps us all together. Keeps us from wandering off. Mm-hmm. And also it's very pleasant. Yeah. And usually, yes, we have 2 minutes. I'm sorry. But we had such a good discussion, and it's such an important topic that we've actually run out of time for the recipes, for talking about the food. So we will do them next week. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Yay! We had lots of participation. Thank you very much. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Last 5 shows, including this one, are archived on the website. This one will be there just pretty much as soon as we get off the air, are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last 5, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.